The minute you walked in the joint, bow, now, I could tell you were a real fat expat. Two fat expats, hey, fat expats, bow, bow, now, now. Spend a little time with us, bow,
now, bow, now. You enjoyed that, didn't
you? I do, yeah. Okay, Stairs, here we are under the tweens' bunk beds.
Well, it's not a bunk. I realised I said bunk bed last time. It's not really.
No, it's a very high bed with like an alcove underneath.
It's one of those IKEA beds with the desk underneath.
This is Sadie's dream bed.
Do you know what? I would not advise it.
Really?
No, because
you're... Hard to make the bed.
Your tween is up there or your teen and you don't really know what's going on up there.
Yeah.
You know, phones, iPads, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you can't get to them and you can't kiss them goodnight.
No. I'll tell Sadie no.
Okay, so episode 18.
Yes, the best place I've ever lived.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about today.
There's always the top 20 places to live where's the best place to be an expat or calculate, you know, how much money you can make being an expat here.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's a bit of a myth.
I agree.
Yeah, I think there are so many things that factor into how you choose and also what was the best expat location for you.
Absolutely, because you could be living in an amazing place but have had a really crap time. Something drastic could have happened in your life, so you're never going to look back on that city with fond memories.
No.
Or you could be in what would be considered a hellhole, but you were with amazing people.
Yeah.
So you had a great time.
And it's a question. If you've lived in sort of multiple locations, it's a question that comes up often.
People,
the minute you say, oh, I lived here, here, here and here, it seems to be the follow-up question is, so which one was your favourite?
And do you get that a lot? Because you've lived in multiple locations.
All the time. People ask all the time, you know, which one was your favourite? And it's a terrible question to answer because it's almost like saying, which child's your favourite?
Yeah.
Because each location is in your heart for a different reason.
Yeah.
And each location you see the faces of the people that you were with.
Yes.
And, you know, you and I were talking last week because somebody had said, you know, that Perth was their favourite location.
Yeah.
Well, Perth was my very first place that I went to and I didn't love it. Like, I have to say, I had a great job, I made good money, it was the first year we were married, but as the city just wasn't my...
Wasn't for you.
No, it wasn't my city.
And I agreed with you on that. We got engaged
in
just outside of Perth and even then.
But see, one of my best friends in the world, she was in my wedding. She lives in Perth.
And she loves it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spent a year with her there and I absolutely cherish that. I got to go and spend a year with her there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so I don't want to be rude about it because it wasn't like it was a terrible year, but in my list of locations.
It's not at the top.
It's not at the top. And I think that's where people feel uncomfortable saying what was best or what wasn't. So I guess with an expat, there's different things. Maybe you were financially better off in the Middle East, but your lifestyle was fabulous in Europe. Or while the food was the highlight in Asia, you were never healthier than you were when you lived in Nigeria. Each location has its highlights and its lowlights.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did this week was instead of, you know, we usually interview two people for about 5 minutes, I tried to do 10 people for
You've
about...
You've been busy.
Can't tell you how amazing it is to Skype someone and there they are sitting in their car in the traffic in Jakarta talking about expat life and you're sitting in Qatar and then the next person you speak to is in Myanmar and the next person you speak to is in Tokyo and the next person, do you know?
And we're all living the same experience.
Yes, and we're all, you know, also I guess the fact that we're all part of that Two Fat Expats community now too, that you can put a question out on the 4Kids 20 Suitcases page. And all these women.
You were flooded.
Absolutely flooded.
Yeah, this week. It was really, really good to see.
And then I got to see them. Do you know, because usually I just get
I don't
want to
chat on that because I come into the podcast and I want to listen.
Yes, like a listener.
Yeah, I want to be a listener and I want to have my initial reaction to what I hear and coming up with an answer.
Yeah.
I like to be off the cuff.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever explained that to people, that that's what we do. So how we do it now, because we really want to have a couple of interviews every week, and so how we do it is I put the question out on the 4Kids 20 Suitcases Facebook page, and people answer, and then I ask if I can talk to people and interview people. I then interview and edit, and then when you come on Thursday mornings, usually, to record the episode, I play it to you as we're going along.
Yeah, as we're actually recording the podcast, that's when I'm listening to it at the almost really how you guys are listening to it.
Yeah.
And that's how I give my first initial reaction to it rather than spending time thinking about it.
Yeah.
And with your Facebook page, there's so many times I want to go in and have, but I can't. I just need to sort of hang back and then.
Yeah. Yeah. So like everyone you hear today, it's the first time you've heard them. So
yeah.
I've heard them sort of ad nauseam because I edit out all the little sounds and clicks and me snorting and whatever. So I figured we'd start, well, one of the articles, because we're going to attach about five different articles today, but one of the articles I really liked was on the Intonations website.
Yeah.
And the reason I like their survey is they told you exactly how they chose. So when they looked at the best place to live, they asked, what was the general quality of life, the ease of settling in, the working abroad index, so about getting a job, family life, personal finance, and then the last question was, how satisfied are you with life abroad in general?
Okay.
Yeah. I think one, I want to play now a lady called Sue Burns, who has now relocated back to Australia.
Okay.
And she has been everywhere. Wow. And her husband maybe did it a different way than you and I, in that they raised their kids left home, and then off they set on their expat travels. I know, I'm absolutely envious as to the way they've done it. But she talks about what she looks for, but we kick off, we start with some of the places she's been.
All right.
In 2001, my husband and I decided that we'd hit the road as expats. So we had 20 months in Vietnam to start off with. We had 7 months in Jakarta. Then I think 19 months in Azerbaijan, in Baku. We went to Singapore. And then we had 2.5 years in Doha. 7 months in Karratha. We were then in Brisbane for 5 months. And then in the States for nearly 3 years. And then we had 7 months in South Korea. And October last year, we finally retired and came home.
Are you prepared to say which one was the best out of all of those for you?
Initially, Vietnam was very, I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't know anybody there. There was a small, very small expat community there when I first arrived, I suppose about 10 girls, and I got in with them after about a month, and I never looked back. I just had an absolute ball. We'd drive up to Ho Chi Minh for the day. And of course, Ho Chi Minh was 2.5 hours away, so we'd drive up there. But no, the people were just so friendly. The food was to die for, and I must admit, I do tend to judge a posting by the food. It sounds silly, I know. The people, of course, are very important, but second to that comes the food. And the food in Vietnam was just to die for. It was just we've not been back. Because we're not believers in going back. We just love Vietnam. My husband is the same. He just really, really enjoyed it.
You know, there's a theory that the harder the location and the smaller the expat community, the tighter the bond. Would you agree with that?
I totally believe that, yes.
So that was a whole different one because I thought about the food. The food was so important.
That makes me think, see, in Abu Dhabi, I refused to try Arabic food. I didn't think I would like it.
We've talked about this,
I think, the Ugly Expat episode.
Yeah.
But now it's some of my favourite cuisine.
I mean,
that's why I think I would love to be an expat in Asia, because Asian food is my absolute favourite. So I'd be eating dumplings morning, noon and night.
But I think it is also with Sue, it was the people, because she said, you know, people first, food comes a very close second. But one of the things she had also said, she didn't go home one Christmas because she felt that it would be too unsettling for her. You know, when you think, I haven't been here long enough, if I go home now, I'm never going to come back.
Yeah.
And she said that Christmas there was about, you know, sort of 10 or 20 of them of all different nationalities. They all bought something and they had it. She said it still remains to be one of the best Christmases that she's ever had.
Yeah.
Now, one of the places, when I asked the question on the website about a favourite, and I knew this was going to happen, Oman just kept coming up. Oman. And
have you been to Oman?
No.
Me neither.
No.
And it's on my list, but we haven't been yet.
Now, I think we both haven't been because it's so close.
Yeah, Oman for me here in Doha is like being in Australia and not going to New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always there. I'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Oman. I really want to go because I've heard it's stunning.
I know.
And completely different from here. But it's that, yeah, we'll do that after we've done here. We'll go there next year.
Well, I spoke to Sam, who's been in a couple of locations, and I thought it was really interesting hearing her because one of the things we do when we've lived in a few locations is we start to compare.
Yes.
And because Oman is so close to us, I was really interested because she had come from Oman and come to Doha. So we'll just have a listen to her.
Where in your mind is the best place to be an expat?
Oman, without a doubt, I'd go back tomorrow.
What is that about Oman? Because you're not the first person that said this. I used to hang out with a girl in Jakarta who lived in Oman, and she never got over it. Like, every sentence began with, in Oman.
Yeah, I had to stop myself when we moved here from saying, it's nice, but it's not like Oman. Or, it's good. It's not as good as Oman, because I thought that's just going to upset people. What is it about Oman? I don't know whether it's because it's the first place we lived outside of the UK, although I'd worked overseas before, my husband had lived overseas before. The scenery is just spectacular. You've got Muscat, sea on one side, mountains on the other. So literally, wherever you drive, you've got this stunning backdrop of mountains when you're in Muscat. It's huge. So to drive from Muscat down to the south is a 10-hour drive. An hour outside of Muscat and you're up in the mountains, and it's like you've gone back 50 years. People are still literally living in the mountains as they probably always have, and will invite you in for coffee, give you dates, as if you're almost family. To me, that is what makes Oman special. Oh. It's the people. We were invited to people's house for dinner. We'd walk down to the local shops, and Omanis would be working in the shops, and would give biscuits to my daughter because she was two. We'd give her books. And would say, you know, come in and have coffee, come in and have dates.
Yeah, because isn't it amazing that we can be so close in geographical, and
so different.
But explain to me then, because here, like a Qatari couple and a Western couple might not go to someone's house for dinner together because that would be uncomfortable, perhaps. Yeah. So are you saying that Omani men and women would have dinner and socialise with expat men and women?
The times we were invited to Omani's house, and I know friends were invited, it was still separate.
Right.
So we went together, and when we arrived, it was my husband went off into the men's room and my daughter and I went off into the ladies' room. And then at some point, my daughter got whisked away to go meet all the men because she was, as I say, when we first arrived, she was 3 months old. So it was totally separate for the sort of the main social element. But I remember we went for Eid, and after most people had gone, we stayed. It was someone my husband worked with, and we all just went into one room. So there was the Omani guy he worked with and his wife, me and my husband, all in their living room, looking at holiday photos, talking about where they'd been on holiday, in the same way that we would with you, for example.
Did it make you want to move to Oman?
Yeah, I want to go to Oman tomorrow. After listening to her, I'm going. Because I've heard that also down south where she was talking, it's a 10-hour drive to a place called Salalah. It is just a completely different world there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're literally down the road.
Yes.
You know, Oman is so close.
And I think maybe people that haven't been to Doha might not understand why we find it so
drastic. Yes, because at the moment we're looking out of the bedroom window to...
Rubble. Just complete rubble.
Yes.
There's nothing but rubble for miles to see.
Like, I think Doha, the city, is gorgeous. It's very pretty. But other than that, it's, a bit beige.
And people don't realise that Qatari people do not drive taxis. They do not work in
They're not
in
working
supermarkets.
In the shops.
They do not do...
If that ever happens, I'm coming back. Just to see it. Because that just is foreign here, yes, that would ever happen. Yeah.
And I guess when you have people working at ground level like that, it's far more open to have a look into someone's life.
Yes.
You're having a conversation in a car, yeah, you're, you know, in their shop, you know, talking about something, yes, on a Friday afternoon. It's a lot easier to get a lot more personal.
Absolutely.
Perhaps.
And yeah, for me, it was talking about the mountains. I mean, that, oh.
I spoke to Linda. She was sitting in her car in Jakarta.
Wow.
I know, it was amazing. You could see tuk-tuks going, yeah, past, yeah, and you could hear, like, I could suddenly hear and feel.
Did
Jakarta.
You miss it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But Linda talked about Azerbaijan.
Okay.
And she also talked about the people. And mm-hmm, so I think we should have a listen to her.
Okay.
In my limited experience, I preferred Baku. I don't know whether that was because it was my first posting, but I think it was the most interesting and I learned a lot about myself and about living somewhere different. That I can be strong. I like my own company. I can deal with adversities. And I sort of grew up a bit there, I think.
What was the life in Baku? What was that like as an expat?
We were there a long time, so it changed, and we lived in three different places. My husband worked in oil and gas, so we were placed in an apartment. We didn't get to choose. We were just put in an apartment, and it was on the 10th floor of this high-rise building, and I had my four-month-old little baby, and off I went. It was snowing when we arrived, and I thought, this is going to be fun. And you had to be on a waiting list to get a car, so we didn't have a car. And I remember my husband's first day at work, and he said, okay, I'm off now, would you like me to lock the door? And I thought, he's just going to lock me in this apartment for the whole day with this baby, and I don't know what to do. He meant it in the nicest possible of ways, you know, he meant it in a good way. And I remember just taking my pram out with in the snow to this circular roundabout, if you like, and in the roundabout there was just larders. Everybody had a larder, and they were just skidding and sliding, and it was just, I just would sit and watch them all day. That was fun. And then in the apartment block, word got round that there was a new girl, and then once you meet these wonderful expat ladies, life moves on at a fast pace, doesn't it? You know, friendships and life began, really. But yeah, it was fun. Oh, and on that journey, the first journey we went out, my husband said, it'll be all right, just go and have a look. And I said, I don't know if it's very safe for my precious baby. And then at that point, the man came out with a monkey on a lead. It's a big learning curve.
What do you think it is that makes a good expat location?
A great network of people, of like-minded people. I think you lose your family and you take on these people and you have to get to know them very, very quickly. So a support base for me. I also liked friendships that I made from people all around the world. It was fascinating, people watching. For me, I had this four-month-old. My son had sort of reddish hair, and he would just be taken off me and whipped off to be shown around. And because he was a boy, he was shown off. When I had my daughter, it was like, oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, and they would give my son fruit and coins in the bazaar, and they would ignore my friends with daughters. It was very shocking to us.
Yes.
Very, very, it's completely different culture. They were very, very, they are very friendly people, and they were coming out of the communism from the USSR. So they were fascinated by us. We were fascinated by them. So for me, it was very interesting.
She was funny, wasn't she?
She was, yeah. It sounds really interesting, a world apart from where she's from. But I think so far with everyone that we've listened to, two things keep on popping up. Is it because it was the first place they went to, that's what they consider their favourite place that they lived? And it's the friends.
Yeah.
It's the people that make it. And I really think that is key.
Yeah, like when she said your friends become your family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Azerbaijan is not the prettiest place on earth.
No, haven't been, but yeah.
Which then brings us to Sue, who possibly is in the prettiest place on earth.
Oh.
And she's going to walk us through where she's been.
Okay.
And why she made the choice.
Right.
Jakarta, USA. Then we were transferred to Angola, which was an experience in itself because it was still in civil war. From Angola to Balikpapan in Kalimantan province of Indonesia. Then to Oman, which was beautiful. From Oman to Perth, back to Jakarta to Cape Town.
Wow. And
I'm really surprised by what you told me today is where you think is the best place to be an expat. Am I right? Are you saying that the best place to be an expat is in Cape Town?
Cape Town is unbelievable. The last place we ever expected to live in.
Now, I was sure you were going to say either Oman or Jakarta. But tell me, why is Cape Town the best place to be an expat?
Cape Town for us has been awesome. It's the people. The South Africans have just welcomed us once we broke into their circles. We put the girls into local school, not international, so we met the locals. We live on the beach. The mountain is right behind us, so we can go to the beach, then up the mountain hiking and in waterfalls. Then we can head out to the vineyards, great food, great wine. It's actually a hidden secret. It's amazing, absolutely amazing.
Okay, so if you hadn't have been to Cape Town, where would be your second choice?
Jakarta. I'm a Jakarta girl as well.
Do you think, because, I mean, you did Jakarta, what, you did Indonesia 3 times, you did Jakarta twice. What was it that you liked about Jakarta?
It's big, it's crazy, it's wild, and whatever you want, you can find it. It's just a naughty city. It's like New York.
Yeah.
They're dirty, they're wild, and they have a passion, they vibe. And I think you feed on that vibe, but not great always for family.
Isn't that interesting? Two completely different places.
I'm really surprised. Now, actually, I haven't been to South Africa yet. It's on my bucket list. But I've heard Cape Town is very similar to Sydney.
Yes, so I have heard that too.
And that's my home city and a city that I am head over heels madly in love with. So I'm dubious and excited at the same time to visit Cape Town because I have huge expectations for it.
Yes.
I want to get...
You want a bridge in the harbour.
Yeah. Right? I want it to look like Sydney with South African voices.
And if there's no opera house, you go.
Then, I'm off, yeah. But no, I've heard amazing things about Cape Town.
Same here.
And Sue said it was like a hidden treasure almost. Do you think that's because there's always that connotation of safety in South Africa that maybe it puts people off?
Yeah, I think not so much with Cape Town. I think if you're talking about Johannesburg.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that probably puts people off a bit is they, worry about safety. But, yeah, Cape Town is just so pretty.
Yeah.
And, everything, the wine, the mountains, the water.
And see, Sue was talking about, the sea and then the mountains behind you and then it's the complete flip. When she's talking about Jakarta, yet she loves it, I'm guessing, just as much.
Yeah, and
is Jakarta wild?
It's like any great big city. You go
it's
to
got
the
it
city
all.
And it's got city action, yeah.
Wow.
So, and I mean, we
need to get myself to Jakarta.
And when Sue says, and you can get anything, that's true, because she was the master of, okay, we're going to have a fundraiser and I'm going to source, 20 different things from 20 different places and I will be able to find them and I will make it happen. And she was just very good at that. But Jakarta does. It has all those hidden little gems of, you can go and discover just where to find things and what to do. And I always said about Jakarta, you never got sick of looking out the window because you would. You'd look out the window and then you'd just see something going on that was like, well, where did they get that or how did that happen or I want to go and find out how that works.
Yeah.
It's that sort of city.
Interesting.
But, like she said, not great for families in that it is very polluted and quite smoggy. The traffic is terrible.
Right. Because you don't drive in Jakarta, do you?
No,
or had
you
drivers
have a driver.
Didn't you? Yeah.
Where there's poverty, there's people ready to do desperate things.
Okay.
So it's different in that way. So I guess she's maybe talking about two different times of her life as well.
Yeah. And do you think Jakarta is your number one place?
I had it as my number one place, but doing this series has made me sort of think about the other things that you need to factor into, and I guess that's a good chance to chat to Sarah because I think this is it. I wonder if, for me, I like a expat location to be something that's really different from where I'm from.
Yes.
So I know that when I was in Canada, I felt very much like I'm driving a minivan, my children are at the local school, I'm going to soccer on the weekends. It all kind of looks fairly similar.
I might as well go home and I could do this at home.
Got you. Where you've got more of a support.
Yeah. Whereas if you're somewhere where it kind of looks a little bit different and there's a whole lot of different customs and things going on, you're still learning. To me, I need that vibe. And so I had a bit of a chat to Sarah. And Sarah's also one of those people that has been all over the place. So she's going to tell us about where she's been and where her favourite has been and how she makes that choice.
We started in Jakarta and then moved to India and then moved to Houston and then to Tumen in Siberia and then to Lagos in Nigeria and then to Moscow.
Sarah, where do you think out of all of your locations has been the best place to be an expat?
I guess it depends what you want as an expat, but I'm a very adventurous expat and I like it to be completely different to where I'm from in Australia. So I loved India. That's my favourite because of the it's just so different. The colour is beautiful, the food is beautiful, and the people were beautiful. With a close second of Siberia because we had a tiny little group of expats and I think I'll be close to most of them forever. So, but India for me.
The general theme that I'm picking up as I talk to people is the smaller the community of expats and the harder the location, the closer you are or the more enjoyable the experience. Would you agree with that?
Without a doubt, yes. I think the more you have, like I just blended into the background in Houston. I mean, it's full of expats. I didn't hate it, but it was probably my least favourite place. Not because of the people, just because I might as well be back home. Yes. So it's those small places that are so different and hard, like, you know, when is broccoli coming in, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when something different would come into the shops, but simple things, we'd all get excited and buy them all. Yeah, but those hardship is for the simplest. Here at the moment, butter is in Moscow. We have food sanctions, although it hasn't been as bad as it's made out to be, but we have no butter. And when you find some butter, it's really exciting. So it's little things like that. So Moscow's not really, to me, It's hard. It's probably hard if you've not lived in Russia before, but having lived in Russia before where no one spoke English, that too was made it, you know, more exciting because you had to at least try and speak some Russian, so which of course I can't, but I did my best. So I like it to be different because when I go home, everything at home is just, you know, I appreciate Australia more than I ever would have if I, you know, hadn't have left. So it doesn't have to be the heart of it, just the completely different to home. For me, it's the adventure of expat life that I like. You know, it's maybe not everyone's cup of tea.
Okay, a few things. Now, I loved that she said, you know, living in a really small, far away area, it's the people that made it.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid if you were in a place and you were with people that you absolutely hated. Could you imagine? But she's talking about, you know, waiting for broccoli to come in. There's no butter. I wonder, is she looking back on those experiences with sort of a rose-coloured lens?
Oh.
Because when you're in the middle of it, you're not thinking that you're on a great adventure. Well, for me personally, I mean, when we moved to Abu Dhabi and I had to go and pick Matt up from site for the first time, I had to go out of Abu Dhabi. I was on the way to Dubai. I was driving on the other side of the road in this really tiny, crappy car with really bad AC. I didn't really know where I was going. And it was get me on a plane and get me out of here. Like, I just had the world's biggest meltdown. But now I look back on it and, one, we laugh.
Yeah.
And, two, we know that I can get myself anywhere these days.
Yes.
Because of that experience. It's made me tougher. It's made me do you know what I mean? You know, back home you've got your Gregory's map. You know, you can find your – that doesn't happen here. You've got to kind of almost get lost to get to where you're going. But looking back on that, I laugh and I think how I've grown.
So I don't think –
anyone's used a Gregory's map in about 4 years.
But you know what? You know, back home you've got your satellite, your sat nav, and you plug in your address and you get there. Mm. That doesn't happen here.
Yeah, I think with Sarah, because she is living the butter situation right now. Yeah. She's
similar to the chicken fiasco in Doha a few years ago.
But it's not. I don't think it is, because I think Doha's very easy to live in.
Yeah.
And I think when you're living in a Baku, or you're living in Moscow even, or if you're living Siberia.
Siberia, obviously the people made it for her, and she wants an adventure and she wants something completely different.
Yeah. You know, when you said, well, heaven forbid you don't like them.
Yeah.
I think what happens is people are much nicer to each other because...
Because you know you're in a small situation.
That's right. I mean, I was raised in a small country town, right? Yeah. So the fact that I wet my pants on the seesaw in grade four, I know if I went to my school reunion in 2 weeks, everybody would remind me of that at some stage, because everything you do lives with you forever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's just how it is. But one of the things, I think it was Sue, one of the first people we spoke to, she talked about Vietnam and it being a small crowd, and she actually said when it got bigger, it wasn't as nice because people started to get bitchy and people started to say, well, why do we do that on Tuesdays? Can't we do this on Thursdays? Yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that, yes, because when we're in Libya, I look back at that now too, we were in a really small community. There was, you know, there were maybe people that weren't my favourites.
Yeah.
I didn't have any great big fights with anyone. Yeah. I didn't, because all we had to do together was have dinner parties together and birthday parties and go to the beach. And you all went to the beach. And
do you think you had to cling on to one another?
You did. You had to cling on to one another.
Yeah.
And so I think, and I also think that there are different locations for different people. I don't think maybe that you would enjoy a Baku or a Moscow.
I know
you
right know? Now.
Yeah.
No.
Like you would not.
Happy to go and visit Moscow.
Yeah.
Don't think I could be without butter.
Yeah. Whereas I'm busting to do one of those again. Do you know?
Yeah.
And because I don't like to go to the mall. I don't need shopping. I don't, you know, I don't do any of that stuff.
No, see, so I need all of that. I need my creature comforts. I'm a homebody.
Yeah.
I like to visit those places and get down and dirty, but then I like to come back to my creature comforts.
Yeah. And so there's a different, I think you getting lost and stuff, that makes you stronger, absolutely.
Yeah.
And for someone else, it's more, I learnt how to make my own butter. We're all on a different sort of thing. I think that's, what I've...
Interesting.
It is, isn't it? Okay, so next we've got, and this is talking about wanting to be somewhere completely different, because we're about to speak to Phoebe, who is
one
from...
One of my favourite names, Phoebe.
Sadie
was almost a Phoebe.
Yeah, I liked it too, but Greg didn't like it.
Oh, no, it's Matt's favourite name.
Why didn't you do it? Oh, because Sadie
won.
Was your... Oh. Okay, so we're going to talk to Phoebe. She was from a small town out of Melbourne, 60 k's out, although she had a life as an expat child. But her and her husband were living in a small town, and then a chance came up for a job. So she wants to talk about where she is.
I've only got my experience so far. So what I know is Seoul in South Korea, which I think is fabulous, like a great city. It's very vibrant and cosmopolitan and very happening. It's extremely fast-paced. And I think it's a great place to live. So there you go.
That's fantastic. And do you think that that's sort of what you look for in a city? You know, what do you think it is that's made you love it so much?
Opposite to what I had at home, I lived in a small country town outside of Melbourne, you know, 60 k's northwest of Melbourne, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people in my town. I was used to quite quiet living, working. So this is actually an experience that's quite the opposite. It's an extremely busy city. I mean, there's 26 million people in Seoul alone, and that's the entire population of Australia. So it blows my mind constantly that there's so much to do. It never stops, the city, basically. And I think that's what is making it such a great experience, because it's so different to what I had, you know, for the last 25 years in Australia. So, although I lived in Melbourne as a student, but yeah.
Did you think you were going to like it as much as you did?
Initially, I wasn't quite so sure. I knew there were going to be some massive barriers. There's a huge language barrier with Seoul and South Korean. I have no chance of learning Korean. It's extremely difficult. So, and that's one of the biggest hurdles. And I think coming here, I was a bit skeptical about how I was going to find that. The driving is chaos. How was I going to deal with that? So there were lots of reservations. But I've been here nearly 2.5 years, so I feel like I've actually overcome a lot of those hurdles in the time that I've been here already. I'm actually prepared to get out there and explore despite the hurdles. So I'll go exploring in the markets and put myself in situations where there are no other English-speaking people and it's completely Korean. And you never forget that you're living in a heightened state either in this country. The police presence is always there. And the US military base and the occupation of the US here is prominent. You never forget it, but you learn to live with it. So there's that side of South Korea as well with, you know, the threat of North Korea right there.
I've had a few friends that have lived in Korea, South Korea, and I've got a girlfriend in Abu Dhabi who is from South Korea, and everyone has said how much I would love it. We've been on a stopover, but we were knee-deep in snow, so we couldn't, and we're out near the airport, so we couldn't explore. But everything that I've heard about Seoul is just amazing. I really, really want to go.
Yeah, I could have talked to her for hours. I found it fascinating.
Yeah.
And what I thought was interesting, and it goes back to Phoebe's partner works in the car industry, and that's why they're there, because the car industry in Australia has died,
but the car industry in South Korea, huge.
Yes, and there's evidently a huge amount of expats there now because everyone, you know, has lost their jobs in Australia. And she was talking about it's possible that they could go to Detroit because that's another big hub. And we were saying how that doesn't kind of have the same sort of expat pool.
No.
But it was like, you know, I was saying to you, I think you'd like Houston. And you said, oh, yeah, but I wouldn't really feel like that's an expat location.
No.
I think that's that thing. We have to feel like there's a little bit of exotic there.
Yeah,
don't
we? Absolutely.
Says, I've been thinking about what we were talking about before when you were saying about was Sarah in Moscow, sort of looking back at a time that was hard and sort of seeing the good.
Yeah.
And it's made me think now of a different Sarah that we're about to speak to, because I have a theory too about when you move around a lot, about that it's not just about the people and the place, it's about a time in your life that you're hanging on to. And so that sometimes it's not that you want to go back to that place, you want to go back to that,
that time in your life.
But I spoke to Sarah, who's in Myanmar at the moment, and she's one of those women who's travelled everywhere and she's had 4 children as well. I'd love for you to listen to her now.
We were in Cairo for 6 years and we had all our 4 children with us at that stage, age from we went there when the youngest was 4 and the oldest was 10. And then we went to Stockholm. And then after that, we went to Vietnam. Then we've been here in Myanmar for 2 years.
In your mind, where is the best expat location?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. And I have, I have a couple of answers. And, I mean, obviously it depends on where you're at and the stage of life that you're at. But for me, the best expat location is somewhere where you're going to get a point of difference culturally, that you're not simply going to blend into another environment. For example, I could go, I'm a New Zealander and I could go to Australia as an expat. Well, it'd be same, same, but different, you know? To me, that would be kind of like, there would be no great experience in terms of culture or anything like that. Whereas, or even just going to another Western country, you know, you would just blend in and just be the same and expect it just to get on with it. But to be an expat and leave home, leave your family, and everything, your friends and everything that you have behind, I think there needs to be some other great, some other benefit into that. And for me, it's a cultural benefit, seeing something that you wouldn't normally see, something that's very different, perhaps something that's going to open up your eyes. And certainly living in Northern Africa opened up my eyes and my mind to the Egyptian culture and the Muslim religion, and that was really very eye-opening, and also for my children. It was a different time of life for us. We had all our children with us. There was very good schools there, a good variety of schools. There was a very big and kind of diverse expat community there. It was very family orientated. We made some really great friends there and friends that we have for life. And I think there is something, I don't know, something about Cairo that gets under your skin that's a real, I don't know, the smell of the place, the people, the Arabic people, they just kind of get, you know, the whole thing gets to you. Yeah, I think it was probably the best.
I think another running theme through this is people not wanting to blend in.
Yes.
So do you think we're all peacocks? Like are expats peacocks? Is that what makes us?
I wonder. Because I also thought, when she was saying that, I thought, you know, when she said, oh, well, we'd be like an Australian going to New Zealand or a New Zealander. And I was thinking how you and I don't want to go on holidays anywhere close by because we think it's just close by and it's just easy and it'll probably be a bit the same. And we're always looking for something really different.
Yes.
Like something we're going to get off the plane and go, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there something in our makeup that makes us choose this style of life?
And is it because you want to, you really want to fill your time up with something different? Because what's the point of doing everyday life away from home if it's every day?
Absolutely. You always, for me, I need a bit of an adventure. Like I love trying to find something down at the souk and getting in amongst it. But then the next couple of days I'll need normality. Do you know what I mean? I need a bit of both.
And Sarah touched on it with the time. It depends what time of life you're at, which is why I really want to talk about Nikki now. I really enjoyed my interview with Nikki. But I started off asking her about her favourite place, because Nikki and I have been speaking online for the last 5 years.
Okay.
And
have you ever met?
We did. We had lunch last year in Adelaide. It was fantastic.
But you didn't know she is a reader of the blog.
Nikki and I met through the blog and she was in South Africa and she had a blog about South Africa at the time and we just started talking back and forth. We were talking on Twitter. Mm-hmm. There was sort of like a group of expats that were talking on Twitter and it seemed like there were so many similarities in our lives and I just got this real vibe that we would be friends if we were together. I think she makes some really valid points about time.
Well, I thought about this. I think my favourite is Hong Kong, but I think it was a time of life as much as anything else. The time that I moved there, the opportunities I had while I was there. You know, I had a baby while I was there. That gives you a special link to a place to have a child and all the things that go along with that. I had a great job, a job I never would have got in Australia, with an Australian company in Hong Kong, and I loved it. And it gave me my own visa, which it gives you a certain sense of independence and security, even though I'm still married to my husband 10 years later. It just makes you feel, it just gives you a sort of sense of something. I don't know. That's how I felt about that. But I really enjoyed my job as well. So I had great friends, amazing friends. I've had great friends in every spot. I think in Hong Kong, it's when you talk about expats in your podcasts and things, it's almost like a different kind of expat to me now, because now I'm in, you know, suburbia, USA, and all my neighbors are American. You know, when I lived in Hong Kong, all my neighbors were from all different countries from all over the world. It just was very vibrant. And, you know, Hong Kong's a city that never sleeps. There's always something happening. You never have to be bored. You get a lot of visitors because they're always on their way somewhere else and they visit you, and you never have to take them to do the same thing or see the same thing. You know, the culture, there's just so much. And the other thing, I just saw an article on Facebook that someone shared about a British tourist in Hong Kong getting lost in the jungle at the peak. So he got drunk, he got dropped off in a taxi, and then he wandered off into the bushes. Because that's something people don't realise about Hong Kong. There is really quite a lot of green as well. You know, think of it as this big city, but it really has, you know, lots of green stuff as well. So there's lots of outdoor activities and hiking. And, you know, we had a group of friends and I, we used to hike every Saturday morning. Yes. And so we did training for sort of this 50K trek that we would do once a year there. So it's just, there's just so much to do in such a small area. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't mean that the other places weren't good, because they were. It's just there's all these things that come together that I can't
that aren't really tangible to make it my very favourite place.
Yeah. I think you're onto something with the time, though, because I think a lot of it we want to actually go back to a certain time in our lives just as much as the place. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, it represents something else that was going on.
I totally agree. Like, I was 33 when I moved there, so I was sort of an adult. I was pretty, you know, I knew what a little bit more what I wanted, probably more than I do now. But it was a time of my life, and it was almost magical. And my husband always says, you know, where would you live? Would you go back to Hong Kong? Would you go here? Would you go there? And I always say, I don't think I could go back to Hong Kong. I mean, I loved it so much, but it just wouldn't be the same if I went back. It was that good. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day and I was saying for the second year in South Africa, I kept meeting all these people I'd met in the first year, you know, at annual events, you go to school things, whatever. And they'd say, hi, how are you doing? I'd say, fine, thanks, how are you? They said, oh, because last year you really weren't doing very well. You weren't very happy to be here. And it was so embarrassing. But the first year I was so miserable in South Africa because I just did not want to leave Hong Kong. And then I got over leaving and I don't think I could go back.
Loved that. Loved Nikki. Hi, Nikki. I can understand why she would say Hong Kong is her favourite, because that is hands down one of my favourite cities.
Yeah.
I love Hong Kong.
It's amazing how many people say you can't go back.
Yeah.
Do you know, because you won't recreate it, because it is. It's a mixture of the friends, the work, the age of your children if you have them, mm-hmm. or the fact that you don't have them,
yeah.
or the fact that they've just got off to school or whatever it is. There's something uh-huh. that's going on that's made it that way. The last one I want to do is Clelia, because I think
interesting name.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's Italian, but she's not.
Okay.
Clelia is lovely and she's going to be my new best friend when I go to Brisbane.
But okay, good.
Clelia has done what I think it's the thing all expats ask each ourselves. So some of us who work in oil and gas don't really go to the most beautiful of locations, mm-hmm. you know. It's Libya or, yeah. you know,
a little bit
Middle
the same
East.
With construction because Matt's building.
Yeah.
So we don't go to a place that's already done.
Built, yes. But there are people that get to go to holiday beautiful islands, and mm-hmm. that's the hotel people.
Yes. Yes.
So, and Clelia was in the hotel industry, so her locations are ones like London and Hawaii, and yes, but she went to Aruba,
Jamaica.
Ooh, I know you can't say it without singing the song, ooh. Can you? Anyway, I've had, I think, three or four people that said Aruba was their favourite. And you can't.
I've never been there, but I can kind of understand that. I'm thinking white sand, really crystal clear waters, and just drinking cocktails all the time.
Yeah, but I agree, and Clelia touches on that, and she talks about what it's like to live in paradise,
mm-hmm.
Why it was her favourite,
yeah.
and also maybe why she couldn't go back.
Okay.
I think for us too, Aruba was the right time, right place, right time. I think somebody asked me the other day whether or not we would go back there, and it was fantastic, but I'm not sure that we would, because I think it was special because of the people that were there at the same time as us. And it's changed. So when we were there, a large proportion of the expats were obviously part of the hotels and stuff that we were, and tourism. But there were also a lot of oil expats there at the time, because there is a refinery on the island. But that refinery has now closed. And so the expat community demographic has changed quite a lot. And Aruba is a Dutch island, so there are also a lot of Dutch nationals living on the island. For me, at the time we were there, there was just a really amazing group of people who we've stayed very, very close to. And I think also because I was sort of having my babies while we were there as well, I have really fond memories of it. I had a lovely time raising children in the tropics and being on the beach. It was pretty glorious. And people sort of say, oh God, what's it like being on holidays all the time? And I used to say, you know what? It's beautiful living here. I'll admit that it's beautiful living here, but you're still living and you've still got to, you know, educate your children and put food on the table and pay the rent. And there are still all the shit things that happen to you still happen when you're living in some exotic location. It just means that at the end of the day, perhaps you can't get a drink and sit on some nice beach. But ultimately, you're still living and the reality of that. Aruba for me was, we did a lot of entertaining at home of friends, but you were never able to plan what it was that you were going to do, because there was always this scenario that you would show up at the grocery store, because the boat would arrive on a Friday, and you would show up at the grocery store and buy as much fresh produce and fresh milk as you could. And people would, I used to get the most bizarre random calls from people saying, oh my God, there's fresh milk. It's a Wednesday. Do you need some? And people would go and buy like 6 litres of milk for you, because that's when you could get it. So yes, the logistics of shopping there were interesting, and I found it particularly challenging actually. And my mum and dad came to stay for a while, and my dad, bless him, built me a 40-foot enclosed cage with a garden bed inside it to stop the iguanas eating my vegetables. And I had a vegetable garden. But again, water was at a premium, and so you sort of keeping everything alive was really tricky. But yeah, I mean, you do all sorts of crazy stuff. And the longer we were on the island, I got to know like their amazing fishermen that would be on the side of the road, and you'd just drive past and they would gut and fillet fish for you on the side of the road. You know, you find bits and pieces that you manage to cobble it all together. I think I used to shop at 3 sort of different grocery stores at any one time, sort of any one week, depending on what I needed. So there was a Dutch store and an American store, and then a local sort of Arubian store that I used to go and shop at all the time. So yeah, I think you just make it work. When we left there and went to London, it was like bloody food cocaine. Seriously, food crack. Seriously, I was going nuts when we moved to London, because I could just get anything I wanted at any time, and amazing produce and everything else. So,
and did it take you long to get out of the habit of, oh, there's something I need, yes, I'll buy 8 packets of it?
I still do it. I've just moved into, like, we've literally just moved into a house, and I just went, yeah, I've just bought 12 cans of tomatoes. Why did I do that? Because I'm just in the habit of doing it, and I think that's just what you end up doing.
Crack cocaine for food. That's like my hot cinnamon donuts when I go back home. It's my crack cocaine. But it's funny, I would never think that there's any similarities between Doha and Aruba.
Yes.
But that whole, you know, when you are entertaining and, you know, if you're using a recipe from Australia that might have a certain product that you're not going to get here, you have to figure out alternatives, you know.
Or how often do you see something in the supermarket and then you go back the following week and it's not
gone.
There.
Yeah.
And in fact, that whole aisle of stuff is gone and it's been replaced with something else.
Yeah.
You know, my mother has shopped at the same Woolies forever. And she knows what's going to be where when. She doesn't even need to look. She'd be absolutely horrified with here, because it changes. The aisles just change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You like tinned tomatoes? Sorry, we got rid of the doubting cans. Oh, well, I thought that was all very interesting. I think it just showed that what can be one person's best location can be another's
nightmare.
Yeah. And we are all looking for such different things
Absolutely.
In what we want.
But I think it does. I think the themes that have run through the interviews today are the people that you meet can really make a place for you. It's what's happened to you in that place.
Yes.
You know, again, going back to Abu Dhabi, I didn't have miscarriages in Abu Dhabi. I didn't have fertility treatments in Abu Dhabi. It was easy peasy. I'm raising this gorgeous little baby that sleeps through the night, and I've got great friends, and we're living this amazing expat life.
Yes.
And Doha has been...
You've just raised a really good
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're 6 hours down the road from Abu Dhabi. Yeah. I mean, you have to spend 10 hours of that, you know, at the Border Patrol in Saudi. But technically, we're 6 to 8 hours drive from Abu Dhabi, yet my life has been... completely flipped.
Yes.
Yet they're very similar countries or cities, you know, but completely flipped my life.
Good point. Now, one thing I want to say, I have a huge apology to make to the lovely Milana, who's based in Tokyo.
Okay.
And I interviewed her and her entire interview disappeared. It just, it was there last night and it wasn't there this morning. And I cannot find it. But I
did
really
she say
to,
similar
she
things?
She said something really interesting because, you know, I rave about Jakarta, whereas Milana had had a very sick child who was medevaced out of Jakarta and she will never go back there again.
Right.
And it's that whole thing. If you've had a bad experience somewhere, but the place that she thought was the best place to be an expat and she had travelled all over the world was Tokyo. And
I can't wait to go to Tokyo.
But she said the people just, she said, you'll pull out a map to find something and within a minute there you'll be mobbed by people saying, you know, can I help you? Yeah. Are you lost?
Mm-hmm.
She loved that there's parks everywhere, that it's, you know, it's. I think for her it's a really lovely experience for her child.
Yes.
And so she just loved the cleanness, the active lifestyle, the easy public transport.
The food would be amazing.
Yeah, the food would be incredible. I did say to her, though, because we Skyped and I could see that she was about 6 foot tall and blonde and beautiful. Do you think everybody gets helped when they're lost? And she giggled and said, yes, she had short brunette friends that also got helped.
Okay, good.
But she was lovely. But I wanted to say, and I think, Sarah, you wanted to say this too, about all the people that said that they would be interviewed and left messages.
Yes.
Because what happens when we get to talk to these people is, like, I got to speak to the lovely Sarah who's in Moscow, and she told me that the, you know, the women on her compound listen to the podcast and,
that
you know.
That blows my mind that there's women in Moscow listening to
us. I know. When I told you before, you got all goosebumps.
I did. I got goosebumps. So thank you.
Yeah. So we want to keep it up and we want you to keep sort of coming to the Facebook page to talk to us because then we can keep doing these interviews.
Yeah. And we think these interviews have definitely made the show even better, I think.
Oh, I think so too. Now, Sez, you wanted to talk about your blog and Instagram pic.
Yes. So it's a husband and wife blogging team, and they're called The Hybrids, and they're based out of Kuwait. And the reason they're called The Hybrids is because they're not 100% Kuwaiti. They are mixed.
Right.
So they call themselves The Hybrids.
That's an excellent name.
Isn't that, you know, isn't that cute?
Yeah.
So it is Ahmed and Asia. Now, Asia is huge in the Middle East. When we've interviewed other bloggers for Blogging Me, they all talk about Asia.
Yeah, she's their fave.
Yeah,
isn't she?
And I've seen her at a couple events when she's come here to Doha, and she's just stunning.
Mm.
And I think what it is that you can relate to her whether you're a Qatari or a Kuwaiti or Emirati because she does cover, she'll wear a turban, but then her outfits, she sort of, you know, plays the field for everyone, really, and I really like that, and there's not a lot of bloggers out there that can do that.
Right,
So she's on Instagram, and they also have a blog, so I'll put all of those notes in the, all of those details in the show notes. And then my book pick, we haven't talked about books.
Not for a while.
Yeah, because we're both big readers.
Yeah.
So the book that I'm reading at the moment, I've almost finished it, and it's called Beijing Tai Tai by an Australian author called Tanya McCartney.
Yeah.
And she's now gone on to be a children's author.
Yeah.
And her one of her latest books has been chosen by the Australian government to send as a present to Princess Charlotte.
Oh, yay!
Yeah, so that's really nice, isn't it?
Oh, nice. And she's an expat girl?
Yeah, so she had travelled a few cities around Australia, and then she and her family, they had two young children at the time, moved to Beijing. And reading this book, she was actually blogging in Beijing, and I think this book is really just an amalgamation of her blog posts.
Yes.
And again, you wouldn't think Beijing and Doha would have a lot of similarities, but, you know, that expat experience, we all go through some of the same things just in different locations.
Absolutely.
And it's funny and, you know, even if you're not an expat, you would really enjoy reading this book.
Yeah.
And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Cannot put it down. So it's called Beijing Tai Tai.
Excellent. And for me, I'm going to do a telly one because my whole world at the moment is just all about that Mad Men is going to finish.
I've never watched it.
I know you haven't. And I'm actually
jealous. I come from advertising
and
industry.
And I'm jealous because I would do anything to be able to watch all of those series all over again. In fact, Greg and I have both said we're going to go back and watch series one because what they've sort of done, in, and I definitely don't want to give anything away because it's like a cult following Mad Men. And it really is. It's going to be the very last episode on Sunday. But they really have tied it all up, and I don't think nicely, but they've tied it up so you know exactly what happens to everybody. Okay. And you're just waiting to see what's going to happen to the main character. But it it's done that thing where everything's changed but nothing's changed. Almost everyone's gone back to the people they were in first episode.
Right.
It's a very beautiful series because everything's very pretty. Like, you know,
it's
when
set
you
in
watch,
the 50s and 60s, isn't it?
Well, it sort of... Is it late 50s, early? No, it's 60s, 70s.
Now. Right, okay, okay.
So, but it is. It's absolutely stunning to look at.
Mm,
yeah.
Okay, I
so
promise I'll watch it.
I will be mourning with the other Mad Men followers on Sunday night when it's all done. Oh. I don't want it to end.
Oh.
I know, it's awful. And we just saw the second to last one and it was just like, oh,
so you don't
my
think,
gosh.
You know how sometimes you watch series and you know when it's finished that it was time for it to finish? You don't think it's time
no,
for
I
it to
could
finish.
Have kept
so
going.
They're going out on a high.
Yeah. All right, says, I think that is the biggest episode we've ever done.
Yes.
And I'm hoping people enjoyed it and got an idea of some of the amazing places.
There might be now people making lists of where they want to go to.
That's the effect
I know,
it had on me.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I've just been to Abu Dhabi and Doha. Oh, boring. I want to go everywhere
all
else now.
Inspired me to go. Oh,
don't know how
there.
I go in Siberia, though. That's maybe the one thing I didn't think I could handle. Do you reckon I'd have a few tanties there?
Okay, thank you everyone.
Thank you everyone. And see you next week.
Oh, and please, if you could leave a review or a rating, we would absolutely love it.
Yes, keep us in the charts.
Okay,
bye.
Bye.